Good afternoon, Jamie.
Hey, Keith. How's it going?
Doing pretty good. This is a podcast recorded on the proper two-week cadence. We've done it.
Boom! Almost didn't happen. You reminded me because our my invite ran out.
Yeah, calendars are
2021. I figured, you know, maybe we'll be alive, maybe not. So I just stopped at 2021. So
yeah, I really wanted to record this one since I dominated the entire previous episode with all of my stuff. I want to know what's going on in Jamie Wright's world. So that's why I had to make sure it was on the books.
Okay. I think, is that just a cover? Because maybe you didn't do as much this time?
No, I got a crap ton done. But
oh, yes. Cool. I'll start. I'm only going to go back a couple weeks, though.
Okay, that's fine.
So we don't get crazy on this episode. Yeah, so first of all, I want to, it seems that you have lost a battle.
What battle did I lose?
A battle that you should have won, but it seems like you have lost it.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the plate stack.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm a little upset about this. Because the,
I am too, because
the
first,
obvious
first
answer was not the one chosen, and I named it like 6 months ahead of time. Granted, they're right about the not being loud enough thing. I never try to project my stuff, but it was the obvious one. It's right there.
It's right there. And they got it. Yeah, you weren't loud enough. I mean, they got an article on Changelog. They're talking about it all the time. So, and pedal,
yeah, it was in the
pedal
Elixir Digest email list that I subscribed to. I'm like, man, I really just need to talk more. I'm just, I never share anything with anybody. So
yeah. When I first saw it, I was like, pedal, what is that? And then they named it all out. I was like, wait a minute, this is plate. It's kind of like that license plate game, you know?
Uh-huh.
I was like, dude, plate is so much better. Like, it's obvious. Anyway. I think they actually, you know, to your benefit, they actually do feel bad that they should have went with plate, but now it's like out there. So,
yeah. Oh, dude, I would have just changed the title of the article afterwards. Just put a little strike through pedal and be like, have an update in there. Like, we missed the obvious one. So they'll be just rearrange these letters a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Maybe just do a PR against that changelog blog post.
Oh, that would be funny.
That'd be awesome. I'm a little disappointed in our 30 subscribers, you know, our stand-up soldiers. They didn't really come out and promote PlateStack, so our stand-up soldiers need to get to work.
Well, at the time when we talked about it, I'm pretty confident I was the only person on the planet using the PlateStack. Not really. There's absolutely no way I was the first person using it.
Maybe the first person with a podcast using it.
Maybe. Or there's some other schmuck out there with a podcast where he just talks to himself who was also using it.
So I was a little disappointed. Pedal.
Yeah, it was kind of a funny one to get brought into on like a Saturday. And I'm like, oh, this is sort of funny.
I liked your response. You said, but plate stack.
Uh-huh.
I think it was Lars or something. He's like, oh man, that's true.
Yeah.
So I've been working on Tetsu / Juve for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is, you know, I worked on Juve a few last month or so, kind of exclusively worked on that. And I was like, oh, I need this method and I need this method. And this is right after the bot architecture. Mm-hmm. And then I started implementing these in Tetsu a few weeks ago. And I was like, you know what? That function doesn't make sense. Why is this so verbose and stuff? So I've kind of had to rework some stuff in Juve, because what I'm working on in Tetsu right now is basically just the ability to OAuth, which I got done. I'm just using UberAuth.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the user is auth, we either need to find or create the bot with the name that's provided from OAuth, and then add that user to kind of the state. So that when a user OAuths, they could either be signing up or they could be signing in
okay.
Slack. You really don't know. So once I started using these functions I already created in Juve, this is when I came to the realization, like, I should really be starting these functions in Tetsu and extracting that into Juve.
Yeah, but so, thank goodness for dog fooding. At least you are finding these things out early. I'm curious, could you bring Juve into Tattoo 2.0 as like an umbrella application for a little while and develop them side by side and then just extract Juve later?
That is actually a really good idea because I ran into this issue a little bit. Right now I'm just using, I was using like a path to bring it in, but in CI, in the CI world, that doesn't really help.
So
Right. When you build your app, it's like, well, this path doesn't really exist. And so getting, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of like adding like another repo somewhere to pull it in CI. So I was thinking, okay, well, I'll just use a git and just always point to main, to the main branch, which is okay, but maybe the umbrella app actually is a little bit better.
It would allow you to not need to like make commits on separate repos as you're really feeling out what Juve needs to work like. And then once you're ready for it to be like, you're like, okay, I think I'm standardizing on this API, then you can extract it out.
Very similar to kind of Basecamp approach.
Yeah, which I think makes sense. Yeah.
I don't want to lose those commits though. Like I don't want to lose that commit history. You know what I mean?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, that would be a downside. I'm not super stuck on commit history all too often. As long as it paints the picture like I want it to paint a lot of times, then I'm okay with it. But
I'm cool with that, like with private, you know, company stuff. I'd be cool with Tattoo or whatever. But like an open sourced API, I'm not quite sure. I really enjoy like looking through the history of various open source products. So.
Does that happen for things that are extracted from other stuff? Like I'm kind of curious if like, so my most recent Basecamp interaction, right, has been using Trix inside of Juniper's lab. And I've never looked at the commit history to see if it's just like the day they started it, they have the commits there, or if when they, well, that's a bad example because they might've just made it public. I don't know if it started inside of Rails, you know what I mean? Or inside of Basecamp, or if it started as a project that they just pulled into Basecamp.
I wonder if they do. Yeah, they probably have the same conversation we're having. I've been using Hotwire a bit. Actually, more just Stimulus, but I'm getting into Hotwire.
Yeah, Stimulus is kind of cool. I like the ideas there.
Stimulus is actually pretty cool. It's a nice little JavaScript sprinkles. Although I ran into an issue, but I'm not going to get into that on this podcast. We don't want to talk about Ruby here or JavaScript. Wait, we have already done that.
I have to talk about JavaScript on my side of things too.
I'll edit that out. The other thing I was going to do is I wanted to bring UberAuth or basically the OAuth functionality into Juve because I don't want to rely like I want that to be part of Juve. The issue is I've only worked with UberAuth and Phoenix projects. So
yeah, you don't want to pin somebody into needing UberAuth, like if they have their own OAuth solution.
Yeah. So I think I might hold off on that and just leave it separate for now in Juve. Because UberAuth, it's pretty easy to work
with. Yeah, it might be one of those things where you just have like an OAuth driver configuration thing for Juve. And you just ship with the UberAuth version by default. Similar to how, you know, Phoenix has JSON modules that you can use. And it utilizes JSON by default, or JSON, sorry. But you could use Poison if you wanted to. You just have to configure what module to use.
Yeah, I do want those events, though. Like the authenticated events. Like the way Juve is going to be structured is all the events are going to go through the bots. And then the bot is going to be configured to like use this MVC framework. So that way, if somebody doesn't want the MVC framework and they just want kind of the bot stuff, maybe they're using a different web framework or they don't want the MVC stuff in there from Juve, not a different web framework, but they just want to use the bot functionality. I want that to be possible. So that's just another future decision I have to make, like how that's all integrated, because all this is going to go through routes and stuff eventually. Mm-hmm. But right now they're kind of inside Phoenix controllers and things like that. So that's the only thing, but that could be the only point where that's not inside of like a Juve controller or route or something like that. Is this authenticated piece?
Okay.
So, I'm going to work on that a little bit more. I just have one more function to create, which is kind of this user install function that's going to work like this. It's going to be a behavior that has some callbacks. So when you call this function and you specify kind of the map of data that comes from OAuth, mm-hmm. it'll look at the default way is it'll look at the internal state of the bot to see if like it's a new user or an existing user. Because a lot of times in bot apps, like if it's a new user, you want to maybe introduce them to the bot or you want to give them some sort of onboarding experience, right?
Okay,
if they're
that
just
makes
signing
sense.
In,
yeah.
Right? You just probably, you know, you may want to add that to your stats or whatever you want to do. So those two experiences are different. So with the default, and to know that if it's a new user, an existing user, you probably want to hit your database. So the default implementation of is this a new user or an existing user is just going to look at this bot state. And then the implementer of Juve could override this function and look at their database, for example, and determine if it's a new user, an existing user, and then that will call different callbacks for them.
Okay.
What do you think about that?
I think that makes sense. Yeah, I don't know. I'd almost have to see the code a little bit to get a better better feel for it. But is that one that it makes sense to have a default handler for that just checks the bot or whatever? Or is that something that like basically every time you're just like, no, you're going to need to handle this yourself?
Yeah, it's probably the user's probably going to want to handle it, but like I don't want it to blow up with some error, like not implemented. Like the default state of checking your the bot state, I think is a pretty good default.
Okay.
You know, and it's easy, right? You just look at the state. Yeah. So, which brings me to something else that needs to be reworked in Juve is kind of this bot state idea. So I think I got it pretty well defined. I've been kind of creating like a Notion doc with some of this documentation that I'll basically convert. So it's going to be on the Juve site. But I've kind of had all this documentation in my head as we're going, and I just wanted to put it down somewhere. So I've been using a Notion document for that.
Nice. Notion's pretty sweet. I just started using that.
Notion,
and it's very cool.
Yeah. Have you ever played with Rome? Side note.
No, I have not. I've heard about it mostly through, that's the thing on the Art of Product, right? Like, have they been talking about that? Is that the kind of graph?
Like yeah. It's kind of similar to Notion is what, like there was like a period like a month ago where everybody's like, oh, use Rome. Notion sucks. And now it seems like everything's integrating with Notion again. So I don't know. I don't know what the differences are.
Yeah, no, I haven't really. I'm going to be totally honest with you. I'm only using Notion to manage my D&D campaign at the moment because the database feature is actually pretty sweet because I can be like, oh, okay, these are locations that I've built and reference them in other areas. It's nice to be able to just spin that up sort of on the fly.
Yeah, that's cool. It's cool use. So yeah, I'm going to continue that. And then the next step after that is getting kind of the DM architecture. So when this is a new user, mm-hmm. also it's going to determine if this is a new install. So did somebody just brand spanking new sign up for this service? Is this a new install and a new user? Then you're going to want to like do some different onboarding. So
makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. That flow, that whole flow, I want to have done by the next time we chat.
Okay, cool.
And then the other question I had for you, kind of related to that bot state, is my original idea was to have one bot that responds to all the services. So if your application supports Slack and Microsoft Teams, like you're still going to use that same bot, although the way you ingest things and send messages back out to those services are going to be different, but I want the logic to be the same. And I actually kind of want the responses to almost be the same, but at some sort of like view layer, you can change those, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's my idea. I don't know how well it's going to actually happen because I haven't really added another service. So I'm wondering now if I should also build another service while I'm building Juve as well. Not another service.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Another implement, yeah, of Tattoo.
Yeah, in Microsoft Teams or whatever, right?
Gotcha.
That seems like a lot of work. That seems like it's going to delay this new release. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think I would maybe look at it from the angle of just you right now. Like, what's the most important thing you can be working on for this? And if Juve is the most important thing, then it might be worthwhile going down that route. If getting Tattoo 2.0 out the door is the most important thing, then I would say go down the path you're currently going. That's probably the take I would have on that one. But it might be worth looking at it in terms of like, okay, what's the experience if somebody is only going to be implementing one service to interact with? Mm-hmm. Is that going to be cumbersome? If like, is the logic that I would add for Microsoft Teams, for instance, is that going to make that experience less good? Right? Because do you think people are mostly going to be building bots for one platform, or are they going to be building bots for all platforms or multiple platforms? You know,
that's kind of one of the major features I want Juve to be able to do, is the fact that it's kind of like a build once and be able to use in multiple places with minimal model work.
Okay. Well, then that kind of answers that question for you, I guess.
Yeah, but I think the way you framed it before actually answers the question. Like, getting Tattoo 2.0 out the door is actually the most important thing for me. So I think, just through our discussion, I think I'm going to continue down the path of just using Slack.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm building these features, I'm always thinking about multiple platforms. So like, the state is like the first node in the state is the platform. So that it's going to be able to work with multiple platforms. Now, is that state going to work on multiple platforms? Is it just like, is this just going to be a giant memory hog of, you know, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm kind of getting into like too much of the weeds there. And I think what can happen is Tattoo 2.0 can come out, Juve, let's say it's 1.0 or it's 0.5 or whatever, is released to just support Slack. Right. And then mm-hmm. like the next version will support Teams or whatever, or, you know, Alexa or something like that.
Yeah. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And based on sort of the roadmap that you probably have for Tattoo 2.0, I would imagine getting it moved onto another platform is going to be kind of high on the list. Like it's because mm-hmm. that allows you to get Tattoo into more places and mm-hmm. it allows you to dog food the creation of this stuff for Juve.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that seems to make sense to me.
The other thing I was working on that actually last night I decided to stop was I was working on applying to TinySeed.
Oh, okay.
TinySeed is like an accelerator program for bootstrappers.
Uh-huh. It's
created by the people at over at MicroConf. And I was really excited to apply with Tattoo. The issue is, because if I could work on this full time,
mm-hmm.
like the amount of work I get done on this is going to be, you know, our podcast is just going to be, you know, all of me talking because I'll be able to get a lot of work done.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be side work anymore, right?
Exactly.
Change things around.
And that application is due on Sunday. The issue is though, the way I keep track of subscriptions in Tattoo currently, it's hard for me to determine like what the MRR is and what lifetime value is and all these metrics that TinySeed would love to have. They don't say they do ask you in the application what those are. And I could figure those out, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a lot more work. So my plan was, I'll just hook my Stripe into like ProfitWell or Baremetrics or one of these services. But the issue is there, the way I determine how to charge for Tattoo is I don't do it the way that these services like. So basically the base subscription is $0. And then every day I go and check how many users, active users they have, and then change their invoice. And then at the end of the month, whatever that invoice is, they're billed for that. What I should have done, which I don't think this was available when I implemented Tatsu the first time, was Stripe has a quantity field. So like I charge $1 per user per month. So the subscription cost should have been $1, and then I just change the quantity as the month goes on. I think that way would have worked with all these nice services that give you all these information points really easily.
Gotcha.
So I just found that out. Like I've been going like back and forth with support and trying those out over the past week, and I'm just like, none of them support the way I'm doing it. So for me to like extract these numbers by Sunday, it's like, it's just too much work. And the next time to apply is going to be in June, May or June. I think the next cohort starts in June, but I think I can apply in May. So I'm like, that might give me, that might be, you know, that might be the goal that I make to get Tatsu 2 out the door and start, you know, adding these services into ProfitWell, adding Stripe into ProfitWell and all that stuff to get these numbers out, and also gives me more time to find what my previous numbers were.
Are you going to just swap your like billing over to do the quantity esque thing?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to fix the billing. Actually I might be going to plans in Tatsu too. Tatsu right now is just, it's just way too cheap, and I'm thinking about doing just tiered plans for the next one.
Gotcha.
So yeah, that's what I've been working on, man. We're going to work on the next 2 weeks.
Nice. Yeah, sounds good. Good to hear some. I mean, doesn't sound like you necessarily would be the most happy with the progress that was made, but I think the dog fooding aspect and figuring out the like, oh, I did some things inside of Juve that just like don't make sense now that I'm putting them into action.
Yeah.
I think that's good to find out. So that, yeah, makes for a good time and kind of drawing out the path that you want to go through.
Cool.
So what's happening in your world?
Okay. So over the last 2 weeks, I don't remember what I set my actual goal to be. I think it was probably get my deck list image creation and sharing business done. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. So something like that. And I did. It's actually not working in my like deployed server at the moment because I think I'm running into like a memory issue with like Image Magic and taking... The architecture for this is a little weird, but so the way that I do this, and you can tell me if I'm nuts or not, is I have a Phoenix like endpoint basically that it just like its entire job is to render a canvas to the screen. So it renders an empty canvas and then it renders a bunch of hidden information about the deck list. And then some, an actual, I think it's, yeah, I run some JavaScript code that goes and then grabs that hidden information and then geometrically draws out this image that I want with like a background pattern and my logo and all the cards in there with like a hexagon holding onto the quantity of the card and stuff. So like it generates this big image. And then I have, when somebody modifies their deck list, I trigger a background job that goes and hits an external service that I wrote that hits that API endpoint, takes a screenshot, returns the image information, and then my application uploads that to S3.
Yeah, that was kind of the thing you wanted to work on. I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but I remember you wanted to create basically the ability to create a screenshot from a canvas.
Yeah, so I built
that. You got that work. Oh, yep. That's awesome.
I built it, and the screenshot taking portion, I actually just built a small Node.js application. It's like 70 lines of code. Just putting together Puppeteer and Sharp and doing some stuff there. But it takes a lifetime to actually respond. And I don't think I have enough RAM on the server that I'm running it on inside of like in the cloud. So that,
well,
that's,
are you making these like large images? Like these images are like large and then you're scaling them.
So, yes. Yeah. That's my other problem is I make the image like super duper detailed because the card images that I have are like pretty big by themselves. So I'm like, well, if I have these big high detail like images for cards, I should just create a gigantor canvas with these things and put them in there. So it's like a 4K image. And I'm like, okay, that might, that's a little, and then, well, I scale it down to be 1080p every time. So I'm like, why don't I just build it to be 1080p? Like, and mm-hmm. then I'll be good.
But you think that'll solve your RAM problem?
We'll see. I mean, I still have like a gig of RAM, so it shouldn't be that bad. But with this whole thing, the, I'm just not good at working with Node.js stuff because I don't do it basically ever. So I'm running it, like, if I run into problems with it, I'm just like, I have no idea what's going on. And there's not like, since I'm using Express, which is just like as bare bones as it gets by default anyway. And I'm like, I have no logging for stuff and it takes forever. So I'm like, okay, screw this. So literally like 5 minutes before we hopped on this call, I created Screen Shooter, which is a Phoenix app that, yeah. So I will, it'll probably take me like an hour to more or less figure out the container build process or like all the things I need to install on the server properly to get it to work right and deploy, get that whole thing sort of working with Mogrify and Wallaby, which are basically the two things I would need in Elixir land to do the exact same thing. So yeah, I'm kind of reworking that mostly for comfort and tools. The reason I used Node originally is actually because I was going to try to just draw the canvas in Node using the JavaScript stuff, because you can do that apparently, and then just export it as a screenshot from a server and not need like a web driver or anything like that. But
yeah, but moving it to Elixir, like, you've got infinite capabilities.
Yeah, so like, exactly. I know what I'm doing there too, right? Like, that's the thing that's helpful there. So it's, yeah, not going to take me any time at all to kind of get that export. But it actually works really cool. And the nice thing is that I built the canvas thing. I built that as basically just like a component that I can render on the screen as like a freaking massive one, or I can render it on the screen like the actual show page for a deck list. I can render that on the screen as like the hero image. And it'll just draw itself onto the screen when somebody visits the like show page for a public deck list. And it looks pretty sweet.
That's sweet.
So,
and then you're going to cache those, I'm assuming, and things like that. So you don't want to draw those every time, do you?
It's not really expensive to draw, as far as I can tell. I mean, I guess it could be. The reason I draw it is it's really fast. So it's fast in terms of as soon as somebody makes a change to their deck list, the next time somebody visits the like show page for that, it'll automatically have the right image because it's drawing based on live information. But you're probably right. I probably should just cache a small version of it and just render an image.
Yeah. I mean, when traffic picks up, you know,
true.
Feel like that's going to be like a pain point. But I mean, if to be honest, like I wouldn't like do it now. I would ship this thing and then maybe take a look at it again. You know? Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's there and that's done. So I need to fix that. I don't know if I talked about it, but using DigitalOcean's app platform, deployments were like really, really slow. Because it's basically watching a branch in GitHub and it would pull it down and build it, and the builds took forever. So I was like, all right, that's just how it worked originally. And then like a week or two ago, they announced that you could deploy based on images inside of the DigitalOcean container registry. And I'm like, well, I'm building off of a Docker image anyway. So I built a Docker or a GitHub workflow for when something is merged into mastered to where it just builds a Docker image, pushes it to the container registry, and then that triggers the deploy. And it cut the time by like down to like a quarter of what it was for to actually deploy something. It takes like a couple minutes versus like 15. So did that. That was cool. I started using Oban for background jobs inside of a Phoenix app. And
so how is that? Like, because Oban seems to be just a small wrapper around just regular gen servers. Like,
yeah. Right? Or is it? So it's a wrapper around gen servers, but it gives you like scheduling and it'll do retries and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. more or less like I can see exactly what the creators are going for. They wanted Sidekick.
Yeah.
And which makes sense because Sidekick is amazing. Like, I've never used any sort of background job tool that is as cool and as nice as Sidekick. In fact, one of the things that's free on Sidekick is the web dashboard for it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's like a pro plan for Oban. Like, so I understand this guy wants to make it sustainable, but that's just like, if that were free, I would be so happy.
Yeah, I've been Yeah, I got some things to say about Sidekick. I love the API. I love Sidekick itself is fast. It's just the fact that it's based on Redis is kind of a big issue on like my client's application.
Oh, gotcha. Well, Oban's based on Postgres, so if you
really?
Yeah, Oban
it's
uses Postgres.
Nodes?
Nope. No, it uses Postgres as a data store for that stuff.
It's weird. It's
you can
weird.
Maybe configure it to not use it, but I don't know. As far as I know, it just uses Postgres out of the box, which
Postgres
is
fast off, man.
Yeah, like, so Postgres gets the job done. Yeah. The problem that I have run into is it's like really hard to get insight into the things that are failing because I have no dashboard for it.
Yeah.
Or it's like, I'll have a job state that failed with exception. And I'm like, well, how do I go see this exception? Like, there's literally no place for me to see this other than like, there is an exception. Sweet. I don't know what it is.
How much is the dashboard plan?
It's like, well, the pro plan or whatever that they have, which has some like extra plugins and stuff on top and the dashboard is like $40 a month,
ooh.
Which I'm gonna be honest with you. If I get, 100 users on Juniper's lab, I will probably pay that. It won't take long for me to be able to be like, okay, cool. I just want to be able to see the state of my jobs. So yeah, that's a thing that I'm working with and I like how it's working. It's just, that's just the one little struggle for it.
Cool. So do you just create like quote unquote workers?
Yeah. You just create jobs and then there's a way to kind of queue those up. And they work pretty smoothly there. I've been using Caffe for a long time as my like admin panel for Pokedex or Juniper's lab. And I there's some like automated job things you can do in there. If you have like periodic tasks that you just want it to do. And one of those things that I have it do is I have it import new cards on a daily basis to see if there are any new cards on the API that I use. And if there are, import them and get everything set up. And that like stopped working a while back. And I was like, huh, that's weird. This is kind of odd. And I looked and it's because the documentation is 1,000% not correct anymore and it doesn't error. So I did some source diving and found out how it actually works now. And I need to submit a PR to change the documentation to show how it actually works. Cause literally like if you do what it says to do, you will get zero effect, but the code you write just will never run. So it'll never throw an exception, which that was a bit of a bummer. But over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to release this sucker. So that's really what it comes down to, because 2 weeks
from
Saturday is my birthday. So that's the release day. And I'm sitting pretty good. A lot of what I have to do still is like cosmetic, just like improving. I'm going through and kind of doing an audit on colors. Like, am I using any Indigo or something out of Tailwind still and some like, thing I ripped out of Tailwind UI. So make sure that the styles look good. I have to do a couple that are like legitimate things, which in terms of styling some stuff like the card details page, I need to actually go through and style that and make sure that looks good. But that's just like one page. So not a big deal. It's used all over the place.
Billing?
Yeah. Billing's the other thing. And I'm not super worried about it because I'm going to leverage Stripe as hard as I can for that stuff.
So
that's really kind of the other one. This morning, actually, I swapped all of my database identifiers, like my primary keys, over to UUIDs. So I'm glad that I decided to do that now instead of later, because I basically had to nuke my entire database and just be like, I'm just starting over. And
why did you do that? Why did you switch?
Mostly because I hate it when you're checking out a new site and you can tell that it has sequential IDs and it's in the like tens, also because I am generating decklist images for private decklists too, in addition to ones that are public. And I didn't want people to be able to figure out the like scheme I use on my CDN to go and see like somebody else's decklist that isn't theirs. That might
like Parler.
Be what?
Like Parler. You hear about that?
No.
Parler's like the Nazi site, that's like the Twitter Nazi site.
Okay, yeah. I heard about that, and then they got shut down, and then there was like, AWS.
But all their deleted, you could still, like their API still allowed you to get all the deleted things, and people figured out that you could just increment the sequential number and get all the deleted stuff. So
nice.
Good work. Okay. Good work, Nazis.
Pretty solid.
Yeah. So that's funny. Cool, man. Yeah, that's a good idea.
So, and it's actually not that hard to do in Ecto, right? Like there are some configuration values you can set in Ecto. And in fact, you can actually, when you're generating a new Phoenix app, there's an option to use binary IDs.
Oh, cool.
And so that's something that's worthwhile to kind of check out there. But yeah, so swapped all, over all that stuff. Amazingly, it took me like 10 minutes to get everything like swapped over and like everything just worked. And I was like, sick. I had to remove a couple spots where I was, and this was actually a nice benefit, is I had to remove a couple spots where the ID was used as a parameter in the URL. And I had to parse it, turn it into an int so I could use it to query the database. Well, when they're already binary, you don't have to do that anymore. So that worked out perfectly well for me. But cool, yeah, that pretty much sums it up. So yeah, I felt like I got a lot of stuff done while dealing with carpal tunnel. Like I've been dealing with like really bad wrist pain. So I think it might be carpal tunnel just based on where the pain is at, but it conveniently popped up like the day after I did yoga. And so I have really weak wrists and I think I might've just downward dog too hard. Yeah. That's like a legitimate thing. I got two down on my dog, but yeah, that's been a rough thing. It's getting a little bit better, but yeah, my mobility in my wrist has been like complete crap. And for a couple of days there, it was like I couldn't type, so I just didn't do anything.
I was gonna ask, like, how are you dealing with that? Like,
I'm being a lot more explicit about the actual posture that I'm using with my hands. Like, we had a ergonomics expert come give a seminar at work like a month or so ago. And that was like actually kind of eye opening on like how you should sit and like where your keyboard should be positioned and stuff like that. And so I've been doing a better job of working on those things and it doesn't hurt, surprisingly,
where
when I do that.
Your keyboard be positioned?
Basically right at the edge of your desk. Your wrist shouldn't be resting on anything.
That's why there's those wrists. Like, do you use a wrist pad?
No, like your wrist really shouldn't be resting on anything. It should be like floating. Like you just have to hold your arms up more or less. Cause then there's no pressure like applied unevenly on your wrist.
Gotcha.
So yeah, it was
interesting.
Yeah. It was definitely what?
I don't think anybody does that. I've never seen anybody. Like,
yeah, exactly. That's the, yeah, it's one of those really weird things, but I find myself sliding my keyboard back throughout the day and then I have to be like, oh crap. And I have to move back towards the front. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I dealt with a little bit of pain last month. I was like, dude, this is like the first time I've ever like felt like pain in my wrist. So yeah, that sucked.
Yeah.
Cool, man. So next time we chat, like we're going to be deploying your app.
Yeah, I'll probably deploy it while we record next time because that'll be on the 5th of February. And then that way on my birthday, I can have Stripe be as annoying as possible and send me as many notifications as it can, as you know, it hopefully gets. So I think that sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, I turned billing back on for Tetsu and I'm getting those Stripe notifications again. It's a good feeling, man. It's a good feeling like, oh, wow, look, people are paying me to use this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. Yeah, that's a good birthday present.
I'm pretty excited about it. So.
Cool.
That's where we're at.
All right, man. Well, I will chat to you next time, one day before your next birthday.
Sounds good, man. Later.
All right. See you.